Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Bennett, and each week we, of course, bring on new guests to discuss various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. Tonight, I'm really excited because we have a very interesting and unique guest. His name is John J. Harper, and he has written a very interesting new book called Transformers: Shamans of the 21st Century. Now, when I say Transformers, that's spelled T-R-A-N-C-E-F-O-R-M-E-R-S, sort of a play on words there. Our guest tonight is actually a clinical hypnotherapist, a futurist, a research scientist, and a writer with the American Delphi Academy and Reality Press. He's a former clinical mental health counselor and a veteran of the U.S. Army, where he served as an electronics and computer specialist in avionics, missilery, and nuclear submarines for over two decades. He is married and has three adult children and eight grandchildren, and currently lives in Spokane, Washington. And his latest book, Transformers, actually reached the number one spot on Amazon's metaphysical list. So I'm very excited to be talking about this book with him tonight. And in this book, the author talks about his contacts with a deceased optics physicist colleague and the telepathic communication that sent him searching for scientific answers to his spiritual questions. So, John, thank you so much for coming onto the show tonight.
Thank you, Preston, for inviting me.
Wow, this sounds like a very, very interesting book and just a really fascinating topic. And how did you get involved in something, you know, so esoteric as trance techniques?
Well, you know, for me, Preston, it started almost 20 years ago. I was a traditional scientist working with the Department of Defense all over the United States and Western Europe for about 25 years total, and this came about in terms of writing the book and doing the research and speaking about these esoteric topics because I had a profound encounter with a supposedly dead colleague who was an optics physicist who died in November 1987 on the way to work one morning of a massive heart attack. And my friend George Begay was someone who I had known for almost 20 years at that time. He and I had served in the U.S. Army together in electronics and missiles and computers, and we both came back to the States in the late 60s, early 1970s to pursue our engineering degrees. But the point is that after he died, about 6 months after that event, I saw him one morning standing before me, very much alive and communicating with me, and it just, blew my paradigm, my model of reality, to the point where I spent years researching how that could be possible.
Well, when you say you saw him, did he look physically real? Was he talking to you?
The experience happened about 4 o'clock in the morning. I had been in a deep sleep, and what I thought I was experiencing initially was a lucid dream. But as I started to shake myself awake from this dream state, his appearance, which was at the foot of my bed, became actually more energetic, more real to me. And he looked at me, smiled, and then there was a telepathic communication that he was not dead and that he was very fine, thank you very much.
Wow.
And his physical appearance, though, Preston, is what really shook me to the core in terms of my scientific background, because an hallucination, I thought, would be a possibility and something, you know, in terms of being grieving, this might not be something that was all that abnormal. However, the fact that his appearance was so different in terms of his physical body, he was no longer in a flesh body. He looked metallic or almost like liquid mercury, and he was very real and very much the same person. I could see every detail in his face. But he was wearing, comically enough, I thought, a beachcomber hat and a Hawaiian luau shirt, and over this metallic liquid body. And it was definitely what I would call today a holographic projection.
Wow, very interesting. Well, when you saw him, did you think, oh, this is his ghost, or did you think you were hallucinating, or, I mean, coming from a
well,
very specific background?
Yeah, and initially, of course, I thought all of the above. I questioned my sanity, I questioned my, you know, level of consciousness. I went through the whole checklist of why this couldn't be possible, but the point was, it was such a real event. In other words, if you were to question this experience, you'd have to question the conversation that you and I are having in terms of, is this real? And, you know, you can get into a real metaphysical loop.
Right.
And I also knew that it was real because of the subtleness of it. This was not some grandstand play of the mind. I was having a real communication from a friend who I had known for almost 20 years. He was absolutely reassuring me that death was not a real event, that did not slow us down any. We shifted energetically into a new body, and that he was evidently free to roam. And I came to realize that the trance of the shaman is what state of mind I was in, and that, you know, that to shift into that state of consciousness, which we might technically call the theta brainwave now, was a channel that opens up this dimension to us.
Well, would you say that this was your first experience with the paranormal?
Well, you know, I had several, I guess, upon reflection, you know, hindsight being 20/20, I had an experience when I was young in grade school that had kind of shook me to the core, too, that I talk about in my book. But the point is that basically from childhood on through my adulthood, I was very left-brain oriented, very much an engineer-scientist type. I had studied psychology, a little bit of philosophy, some theology. So I had, I think, a pretty well-grounded background in both the physics and metaphysics. But I had never even given thought to the idea that the dead could return to the living. I did know nothing really about the near-death experience at that time. Those were in the early years. There wasn't a lot of literature except for the old ancient literature in the early years of spiritualism and metaphysics. I never, ever even picked up a copy of those books or even read an article prior to this event.
Well, so it was this event that actually got you started studying all these things of, you know, astrology, astronomy, near-death experiences, and Egyptian and Mayan cosmology, and all the stuff that you put together in your book?
Yes, that's right. And one thing led to another. One topic would lead to another article, and things started happening to me, as no doubt other guests, and probably maybe happened to you as well. You know, synchronicity kicks in, and all of a sudden you find you're kind of like following breadcrumbs that have been dropped for thousands of years along the trail, you know, and a book would come here, or a person would make a comment that would open my mind to a new way of looking at things, and one thing would lead to another. A person would call me on the phone who I did not know, and we'd enter into a conversation that gave me a little bit of information that I was looking for, and so on and so forth. It got to the point where it really did become humorous, and I would just kind of look up in the air at times and say, oh, this is just wonderful, you know, because the way I started sensing that the universe was user-friendly.
Right. Very interesting. So how did you actually start writing this book? I mean, what prompted you to write it?
What I did initially, I had no idea whatsoever that I'd ever publish a book or continue to speak about this publicly. But from late 1988, early 89, I started taking copious notes on my research. And somewhere in the early 1990s, around 92, 93, I started putting together an outline of what I was discovering. And one thing led to another, and that became a table of contents for a book. And then references, you know, were documented. And I was a technical writer and, like I say, a scientist. So this was pretty common for me to do. I was very methodical, and I'd keep folders on all these subjects. And after a while, I started seeing the convergence between physics and metaphysics, and that led me into contacting people like Dr. John Mack at Harvard University on alien abductions. It started me down the trail of the UFO circuit, etc., in terms of trying to link all these loose ends together under energy. What I really discovered, Preston, was that physics and metaphysics converge on zero-point field physics, and I see today that that's exactly where we're going as a species. We're opening back up, you might say, to the shamanic realm that Dr. Kenneth Ring talked about in his near-death experience books. And I found that was true, that what we're experiencing today is the early phase of the shamanizing of humanity, as Kenneth Ring puts it.
Oh, interesting. Well, I mean, humanity does seem to go through sort of cycles where we're metaphysical for a while, and then we become more scientifically oriented, and then we kind of swing back to thinking more metaphysically, and each time we sort of build up our, I guess, school of knowledge until we get a more complete picture of what's going on. And what's interesting about your book is you're approaching it from a scientific angle, all these very spiritual things. And
you almost are confronted with you might say it's a paradox that, you know, how can we think left brain and then use our right brain to get our intuitive sense of what a subject might be revealing to us. And what we realize, I think, is that the left and right brains have been kind of compartmentalized too long, and what happens is that, you know, we get this sudden surge of insight that kind of blows our model of reality so bad that we're forced into merging these ancient and modern concepts back together again.
Right, right. Well, I'm interested especially in your book because of the idea of trance and how this can be used to, you know, not only open the doors to the past and future and discover a lot about our own selves, our past lives, or our own abilities. And trance, I mean, I think that a lot of metaphysical researchers discovered a long time ago that dissociation or some level of dissociation seems to be present in a lot of cases where metaphysical or paranormal events occur. And trance trance is like a universal phenomenon, culturally universal. Would you say that that's a fair statement?
Yes, I would. And you know, as you get into the literature with shamanism, and as you begin this research that Dr. Mack at Harvard did with alien abductions, what you really are confronted with is that the Earth herself is a living organism, and that the Schumann resonance frequency, which is the frequency between the, you might say, the core of the Earth and the upper atmosphere, the magnetosphere, is 7.8 cycles per second, 7.8 hertz, give or take. Some say that is rising, but it doesn't really matter if we're resonantly tuned to that. That means that our theta brainwave will likewise lock into a new phase of that frequency. But if the theta brainwave is 7.8 cycles and Schumann resonance frequency is 7.8 cycles, you can see there's a one-to-one match there between the mind of Gaia, of the Earth, and the trance state of the human being.
Right, so presumably, I mean, as Gaia changes and our resonance, our own, the resonance of humanity's consciousness changes?
Yes, in fact, it's even more fascinating than that, in the sense that I believe the axial tilt of the Earth, which is approximately 23.5 degrees off true magnetic north now, you know, you've got a geographical North Pole and you've got a geomagnetic North Pole, and those are not aligned at present. Well, there's some theories in the ancient literature, and I tend to believe these now, are what some of the old mythologies are about the fall of consciousness. It's talking about the time when the Earth actually tilted off center, and our consciousness, because it's tuned to the Earth frequency, actually that was a fall in consciousness, and what we're experiencing today is a realignment or a phase shift, or if you will, the common term now is a pole shift, is imminent. You know, folks like Danion Brinkley with the near-death experience community, you know, he has said around 2012, 2013, there will be a huge electromagnetic pole shift. Well, I went into that in my book, and I looked at it from a geological standpoint as well as a metaphysical standpoint, and I'm convinced now that we are heading for a pole shift. We're in a pole shift phase right now, and this is going to change a relationship to everything in terms of consciousness.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, you know, the Earth changes and pole shifts and entering into the fifth dimension, this type of theme has been very prominent not only in UFO contactee accounts, but in near-death experiences. Out-of-body explorers are reporting this, Native American elders, and, of course, just mainstream scientists are reporting very similar types of things. So clearly we're in for some type of change. But you say in your book that we are becoming more telepathic and abilities of this kind are increasing. Is that true?
Well, it seems to be the case. I mean, if you look at just the topics that are being discussed on radio programs like your own, we can see that there's momentum building. There's pressure kind of pushing us forward, if you will, in consciousness to bring these topics to the forefront. And if we start looking at all of them as a connected group of ideas, we're seeing things, you know, like global consciousness. And one of the things that I realized from my encounter, my after-death communication, as it's technically called now with my friend George, was that this telepathic encounter in that shamanic brainwave state is where we're all going. I mean, some of us are going kicking and screaming. We don't believe it. We're not going to accept it. You know, it's the old Missouri show me type resistance. But that's fine. You can go, in my opinion, you can go kicking and screaming, or you can go willingly, but you are going to go to this new level of consciousness.
Well, what does this new level of consciousness mean for humanity? I mean, suddenly we're all telepathic. Is not that going to create some confusion?
Well, interestingly enough, I've had spontaneous experiences of this level of consciousness while I was researching my book, and it was really interesting. A lot of them came, this experience of telepathy or opening up to a larger mind came to me when I was under extreme stress. So I look at the world today, and I look at the events today in Pakistan, for example, the assassination of Bhutto, and the nuclear confrontation between the world powers. I look at the pressure points in weather and climate change, melting of the ice caps, potential flooding of all world coastlines, and so on and so forth, as a major, you might say, nervous breakdown of the system. And I do see problems. I do see crises with people trying to adjust both to the climate change and to the new levels of consciousness, which in my opinion are linked one-on-one. If you see the consciousness change, you're going to see weather changes and vice versa.
All right. So you think that we're definitely going to have major earth changes where the climate
we're having them now, and most of them are happening at the bottom of the oceans. They're happening in ways that the tsunami in 2006 hit in Indonesia. We're seeing undersea volcanism increasing. There's even speculation by NASA this last week or two that there may be a volcano erupting under Greenland, under the ice caps. That's generating the heat magma flow that is melting the caps at the rate of the state of Florida every week. There is now speculation that's almost scientific concerns, I guess is the right way to say it without being too melodramatic, that by summer 2012, the entire Greenland ice cap will be melted.
Wow. Now, 2012 is a date I hear a lot. That's, I suppose, the Mayan calendar, the end of the Mayan calendar. And you mentioned that date as well in your book. What is so significant about that particular date?
Initially, I thought absolutely nothing. I went, how in the world could anybody that lived hundreds to thousands of years ago pick a date such as 2012 or any other date in the future and make such wild-eyed predictions about climate change and culture and civilization changes and consciousness changes, until I realized that the tuning of the calibration of that dateline, that timeline, was to the tilting of the Earth axis, the melting of the ice caps. In other words, go back to the Old Testament and the flood of Noah. There are some really good mythological as well as scientific geologic data that there is a way to begin to date stamp, if you will, the melting of the ice caps and then the floods that come from that. And so it looks to me that all of this is triggered to sunspot cycles, as some, you know, scientists are now speculating as well. And NASA, again, has said on or about 2011, 2012, that will be the solar maximum in solar cycle 24, and there's been some scientists saying this will be the most intense time of solar activity in the last 500 years at least. And so what I expect to see to be, you know, just to wrap this up for a moment and then and punctuate the statement, I don't see global warming becoming the problem, but rather I'm sensing and seeing the emergence of a new ice age, a little ice age.
Oh, really?
Yes, no. I think the La Nina cycle will be so intense this year, 2008, right now, I believe, that this is the time that the oceans are going to cool and that they're going to actually trigger volcanic activity, undersea volcanism, which of course throws ash into the air and cools the climate dramatically. And I see this as a natural cycle that was well known by the ancients. I think mankind has very little to do with those larger systems. I mean, we have environmental pollution, don't get me wrong, and we are poisoning ourselves. But in terms of these changes that I'm talking about, I believe they're as regular as sunrise and sunset.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of the people who are predicting Earth changes are talking about major loss of humanity on the level of, you know, anywhere from 1 billion to 4 billion people or more. Do you think that that's a fair assessment? Are we really in for some that hard of times?
Well, there's a lot of pressure points, and if you picked any one of them, I would say no. But when you see them converge, everything from, you know, extinction of species and habitat to food supplies in the oceans, viral pandemics looming such as bird flu. And by the way, just today on the wire service, I saw a confirmation in Pakistan again that human-to-human communication of the H1N51 virus, bird flu, has been verified. It can now jump directly from person to person. So when you look at that pandemic alone, which could you know, literally take hundreds of millions of people off the planet physically in a matter of, say, 90 days to 6 months, give or take. There's usually, with bird flu, maybe I'll inject this, this is one of my interests, bird flu will come in three phases. The first phase will be kind of a, you know, a not too severe infection rate. And then phase two will kick in about 6 months after phase one. If this follows a normal pandemic pattern, and that will be kind of the mop-up phase where it really takes a good part of the population with it, the ones that are susceptible to this, and then phase three, about 6 months or so later, will be kind of, a, you know, the calming down of the virus. And I've studied this pretty extensively because I really sense that that is probably going to be more of a reality check than any of the other Earth changes for most of us. That doesn't mean there's not going to be severe migrations of populations to higher ground once the coastlines become inundated and other volcanic and mountainous regions become actually safer to migrate towards. You get away from the oceans, it'll be rising.
Right. Well, a lot of people say that the Earth changes are actually, I mean, although being severe, are a healing experience or for the Earth, trying to return back into balance, and that afterwards it'll be a new dawn for humanity. Is that something that you see as a futurist?
Yes, I'm extremely optimistic, but when I speak of optimistic outcomes, I realize there's going to be a lot of pain and suffering en route to this this more golden age type scenario. So I try to balance what I say with realism, knowing, again, you know, as you mentioned earlier on, Preston, you know, I'm the father of three adult children and the grandfather of eight. And not for a minute do I want any of that, these pandemics to wipe my family out. I don't wish that on anyone. And so I have to realize that, you know, everyone speaks from a different point of reference, you know. And I mean, if you're, 75, 80 years old, you have no children, and, so what? You know, you're getting ready to go anyway, right? But if you have a large family and, you want to protect them, as I do, it colors the presentation, if you will. So I just want to keep that, in the forefront of our listeners' minds that, it depends, I guess. You have to just use discernment, not judgment, but discern where the person is coming from. If, if they say things, all things are bad, where are they coming from? If they say all things are good, where are they coming from? And I tend to go towards the middle of these discussions.
All right. Well, in your book you write a little bit about crop circles as well and their link to consciousness. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, one of the great debates, I guess, ongoing is, the origins of crop circles, whether they're, a natural phenomenon, or are they extraterrestrial, in other words, coming from beings off the planet.
I don't think there's a lot of evidence to show that they're UFO related. I mean,
Yes. Well, there's a lot, I guess you're referring to the fact that a lot of folks will report light, burst of light right before they see a crop circle manifest. My opinion on that is that it's Earth generated, that we have to really take seriously the idea that the Earth is a living being. This is what the ancients said. This is what the shamans will tell you when you talk with them, when you work with them. The Earth is a living organism that speaks symbolically through animals, plants, minerals, etc. And what we're seeing in these cereal grains is this very benign patterns of geometric forms that are meaningful mathematically because the universe is a geometric formation, if you will. And these are natural energies that are flowing from the core of the Earth into the north-south poles, and they are cycling through and creating, a nexus or a connecting point where this energy comes up, just like acupuncture points, meridians, with the energy medicine folks, and that use those in the East and now in the West, in Chinese medicine in particular, yoga, the chakra systems is what I'm talking about. I really believe that the sacred sites of the ancients were tuning into resonantly these earth energies, these ley lines, and that is why you see some of these formations so strategically placed around some of the crop circles, for example, in England.
Right. So what are these? These are messages direct from Gaia. What are they trying to say to humanity, other than, wake up?
Well, what they're doing, it's a natural expression. These crop circles have been seen as far back in the literature to the 1700s. Now, they're not in as prolific and as complex forms as we see today, but remember, my hypothesis, if you will, is that as the north and south poles realign with the true magnetic north and south poles, that a flow of consciousness, if you will, is now permeating the little ground that we're standing on, and so they're becoming more coherent symbols because they're actually part of the global brain awakening process. In other words, a small system does not wake up a big system. A big system wakes up a small system. So as the Earth wakes up, we wake up.
I see. It's very interesting. Well, I know of a case which occurred in England in which a bunch of people did get together and meditated into like a trance state and visualizing a certain crop circle formation, which did appear, in fact, the next day.
Uh-huh.
So it's clearly possible to communicate with the energies that are making these crop circles.
Well, see, one of the things that leads me to this conclusion is that when I interviewed some of the near-death experiencers, they were shown or told, in some cases, that in the near future that groups, small groups of people would actually, through prayer and meditation or trance work, if you will, would actually be able to feed themselves by calling food, in other words, plant life, spontaneously from the ground. They would be able to literally manifest through visualization and meditation techniques the food they needed on the spot. And when you think about that, that is just another overlay of the crop circle phenomenon.
Right, and there are many reports of saints in past history and other holy people who have been able to manifest food and other objects, so it's certainly not unheard of, and I think definitely part of the human potential.
Yes, exactly.
So, now, back to trance states and seeing the future. I'm very interested in that because after my mother died in 1984, I got involved in out-of-body experiences, and which involved, you know, getting into a trance state and until you were deeply relaxed enough to actually leave your body. And when I would do this, I would come back from the experience with visions of the future, usually in the form of dreams, but sometimes just kind of like visions, I guess, or premonitions, and which would often, pretty much always come true the next day. And I was just wondering, you know, what's your take on that? How come we can see the future, and what exactly is happening when someone goes into a trance and they start seeing events that haven't yet come to pass?
Well, if we think of the Earth and the envelope of energy that we are embedded within, and I would use kind of a cotton candy metaphor here. If you think of the energy lines that are flowing through the North and South Poles, through the center of the Earth, and then branching out thinner and thinner, if you will, as filaments of energy around the Earth, and we're embedded in that cocoon of consciousness, and kind of like a big cotton candy machine of energy. What happens is, the ancients said there's only one moment, really, and that's the moment of now, the eternal now.
Right.
So when we're grounded, so to speak, in this level of consciousness that you and I are speaking to each other from, then, you know, rocks are hard and you know, leaves are green and everything is kind of just a standard level of energy. But in these other states of mind where you're tapping into the past events that left their energy signatures in a given region, such as ghosts, for example, that's an energy phenomenon. And then you would also be able, in this holographic cotton candy machine metaphor, to be able to tap those fields of energy that are just forming. Those are what is a potential future. And so many of the near-death experiencers that come back with dire predictions for the Earth would always say to me, but if we change our level of consciousness and the way we relate to one another and the Earth, none of these terrible things have to happen. Why? Why don't they have to happen? It's because if we could sync with the future collectively, get a critical mass of consciousness going, then together we could form the reality, literally shift the energy fields back to a state of consciousness that would allow the free flow of this energy through us. There would be no blocks at any level through the Earth, through us, through animals, plants. And basically what you would have done then, President, is restored the Garden of Eden.
Right. Well, it seems to me that science, as you said, is leading more towards metaphysics each day, and that they're, you know, basically meeting at the end of the road at the same thing. And that trance is going to become more and more widely accepted and scientifically studied as an avenue of answering some of these types of questions.
Well, actually, it'll be more experienced spontaneously as the poles shift towards the 2012 end date of the calendar. And again, I'm not saying on any given date or any given week or any given month, but on or about 2012, when the electromagnetic fields shift and realign themselves, there will be a surge of new consciousness that the ancients had tapped from time immemorial, and it sounds like you have tapped in trance. I know I have tapped this greater mind of Gaia before spontaneously without trying to do it under times of great stress, and I know for a fact that it can be done. I think the only thing we need to reconcile now is this concept that this is the ideal state of mind. We're going back to the natural mind of mankind, and that is a deep connection between the head and the heart through nature.
Right. I think that a lot of people now, I mean, we assume that we're in our highest state of consciousness, but it's more, I think, we're like in a profound state of amnesia, because if truly we were conscious, we would remember our past lives, we would remember our experiences at night when we go out of body, because I do believe everyone goes out of body each night. They just don't
recall. That's right. That's when we become multidimensional. That's right.
So this is where you see us leading towards a more integrated and whole consciousness, not only individually, but connected to each other?
Yes, and what we're actually doing is we're synchronizing the entire energy spectrum through us, and so we're going to become more sensitive to everything. We're going to become more acutely aware of sound, of light, of food sensitivities. Everything's going to, you might say, make an impact on us. People will have to, for example, find their vocations more carefully now, instead of, you know, being driven by a curriculum at a college and I want to make X number of dollars. You're going to have to say, you know, what is my purpose on the planet? What am I here to do based on my natural abilities and skills? And once we all shift into that level of performance, then the peace that we seek is going to come through us, because we won't be chasing anything. It'll be coming to us as a natural manifestation of the consciousness from which we will operate.
Right. Well, I think you've hit on the key of being trance, because pretty much all the enlightened masters and the major religions, they're very different, but they agree pretty much on one thing, which is meditation. So what do you think people should do, or how can the average person sort of embrace the concept of trance and meditation and use it to raise their consciousness and start, you know, reaching their full potential of a human being?
Well, one of the things that I have done was initially, being an electrical engineer and computer scientist type, was I started researching and looking for new products that could work. In other words, that's the bottom line. It's not the hype. It's, you know, does it work for you? I found a product and an individual, Carlisle Bergquist is his name, and he is a individual who developed a CD that I have used now for years, and I make it available on my website. You can learn more about it, but it's called Vantage Quest. It's not available, as far as I know, anywhere else. There's only a couple of us, I think, that represent Carlisle Bergquist and Vantage Quest 6 technology at the moment. But Carlisle went to the Amazon, went to Brazil, as part of his doctoral studies at Saybrook Institute in San Francisco. And his mentors, his doctoral dissertation committee folks, one was Dr. Stan Grippner, you know, who was an authority on shamanism and trance work. When Carlisle came back to the States, he began working on a product, a CD technology that would bring us naturally into this state of mind. Carlisle is also a very accomplished musician of over 30 years' experience. My understanding was he worked with some of the major groups and major productions in New York City and in San Francisco and elsewhere over the years. But his main call is as a transpersonal psychotherapist today, and he's in private practice in Salina, Kansas. But the point is that this technology that I talk about at my website and share some of the information about it there is one product that works. And I use that as often as I need to create the state of mind that I want to use to manifest anything, whether it's health, whether it's a new opportunity in business, whether it's insight, intuition into a problem. But you do have to find something that works for you, and this Vantage Quest technology works for me.
Wow. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is John J. Harper, who has written a very interesting book called Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. And people can reach get this book on, I'm assuming, Amazon.com, as well as at John's website, which is www.johnjharper.com. Is that right?
Yes, JohnJayHarper.com. That middle name J and initial J always throws folks for a while. The full name. I use my full name just to, because John Harper is about as common as Joe Smith in some communities.
Right. So what does your family and your friends and think of your work with, you know, this kind of esoteric field of consciousness and the paranormal?
Well, years ago when I started out, I really kept it to myself outside of my wife, of course, knew that I had undergone some tremendous transformations in consciousness, that I went from a mainstream scientist to a babbling metaphysician for a while. And as that word got out, I started in the Seattle area, and I would do talk shows years ago with Laura Lee and others who were starting their career out in as a talk show host, and that led from one thing to another. And then I got folks like Dr. Bruce Lipton, who, you know, is at the forefront now of cell biology and has written a marvelous book himself, and he wrote the foreword to my book, and I brought him here to Spokane to speak, and others like him, Greg Braden, and the list goes on, Mellon Thomas Benedict, who's becoming, I think, a household name in the near-death experience community. But once I started getting out here and sharing, and my wife and family and friends started realizing that this was kind of maybe the cutting edge of the tsunami wave, and then I just wasn't out here on a limb anymore, yeah, everyone kind of just wanted to know more about how these things all link together and where they fit into the big cosmic puzzle themselves.
Well, would you say that your experiences have increased your awareness and given you have you had like a visions or paranormal experiences on a regular basis, or is that something that comes?
Well, I guess the way I would put it, Preston, is that when you get to this new level of consciousness, you are there all the time, pretty much. I mean, you know, a diet can impact it. Whether or not you're physically well can impact it, of course. The weather can impact it. A sunspot can impact your level of consciousness. And what I feel more and more is connected to everything. I mean, I literally feel connected to the full moon cycles and the new moon cycles. I don't even have to think like this. All I know is my consciousness has changed, and I'll look up in the night sky, and there is the approach of a full moon, for example, and I go, of course that's what I'm sensing. Now, this used to be crazy, and that's where the word lunatic came from, was from lunar, right?
Right, right.
Well, the thing of it is, once you get to a beyond whatever is blocking your awareness of this new potential that all of us have within us, once you release that and you become aware of it 24/7, so to speak, then you're no longer trying to get anywhere. You're trying to sink deeper into the core of yourself when you need to evoke that level of mind.
So when someone is going into a trance, are they opening up their chakras, so to speak, or awakening their kundalini, or what exactly is happening to them physically and mentally?
Yes, that's exactly right. I think that the model of reality that we're going to have to accept at some point is the ancient idea of this seven-tiered, seven-leveled spinning wheels, these vortices called chakras. These are, you might say, the energy surrounding the endocrine glands. I mean, the idea here, folks, for those of you who are not, immersed in this idea yet, you have basically three levels of energy linked to the energy glands below the belt, and you got three above the belt, and then you've got one centered in the heart. And so what we're talking about is kind of like an electronic circuit, if you will, where you have a very low level of communication going on at the grassroots level of your being, at the cellular level, the primal instincts, food, the natural tendency to want water, the natural instincts for sexual reproduction, etc. And then what you have is the intellectual side, and the desire to communicate through the voice box or the larynx. And then you have another layer on top of that, which is the third eye, which is what we're talking about basically in trance, the pineal pituitary gland. Once you get these circuits, you might say, cleaned up from erratic and chaotic impulses and random kind of noise, so to speak, from your life experiences, from your diet, from the environment that you work in day to day, where you even live will impact this opening of these chakra systems. But the point is that once you get all these circuits cleaned up and tuned up and resonating together, you will open up this new level of awareness that you'll say, well, I had that experience once, but I thought it was, you know, it was a random act. Well, what we're trying to do is get this randomness out of it and tune in to a pure signal, a higher level of consciousness. And that's what we're talking about, the pineal pituitary gland in the center of the brain, which develops DMT, dimethyltryptamine. That's the body-made chemical that we're talking about, that Rick Strassman, MD, the psychiatrist at the University of New Mexico, has done a lot of studies on, wrote a wonderful book called The Spirit Molecule, DMT. But these are the ideas of Terence McKenna and all the ancients, like I say, that whether they had these words or not is not really important. They had the experience of this level of consciousness, and this is what we're talking about. So, you know, real quickly, I guess, President, that's kind of an overview that, yes, it's all part of our package, and yet most of us have we've not calibrated it yet, not tuned up the circuitry.
Right. Well, I guess most people just assume that there's just a few levels of consciousness. There's the sleeping consciousness, there's the dreaming consciousness, the waking consciousness, when in fact there's many, many different levels of consciousness. And in my own experience, I had one experience where I was doing meditation, and I was in some type of trance. I don't know what level of consciousness I was in, but it must have been pretty deep. I was fully conscious, but suddenly my sister came tearing into my room, and she's like, "Why didn't you answer the door? I've been knocking on the door for 5 minutes." And I didn't hear it. I could not hear it at all. And I later found out that there's a Buddhist name for this state of consciousness where you can be fully awake and yet cut out all outside noises. And another example, which I thought was really interesting, was one day, you know, I just was going through my day as normal when I started to have an experience in which my dream came true. And I had this dream the earlier day, but as it came true around me, I really felt sort of an elevation of consciousness, and like the world around me was more dreamlike than it was real, and almost like a sort of a cosmic consciousness moment where I felt connected to the universe and I was where I was supposed to be, and I knew what was going to actually happen too because I had dreamt it.
Yeah.
So to me that's
a very good example of what we're talking about here, that we're making the dream real, we're making the dream more lucid, and we're in a dream right now, in fact. Some of us would call it a nightmare. But we're in a dream state right now as you and I are talking, and we're trying to make it more lucid. And the lucidity comes about when we actually see what's inside of us manifest outside of us almost simultaneously. And there's a psychotherapist, I don't know if you're aware of him, because you just explained exactly what he does with his clientele and his group therapies. His name is Paul Levy, and he works out of Portland, Oregon. But Paul actually, you know, works with folks based on an experience he had many, many years ago that actually got him put into a psychiatric facility. But this, he realized, was a normal state of mind that the human being would gravitate towards in the future. Have you heard of Paul Levy?
No, I haven't, but, you know, I'm definitely going to look his name up, because when that experience happened to me, and it's actually happened many times, it's like being woken up when you're already awake. It's like, you know, when you're having a lucid dream and you suddenly become lucid, it's a very profound shift of consciousness when you realize suddenly you're in a dream, but you're awake. And it was the same.
It's like deja vu, isn't it?
Right, it's exactly, in fact. I'll be having deja vu, and then I'll suddenly remember the dream and have this whole vision of what's going to happen. So there's a weird shift in consciousness that is definitely taking place there, which is where I want to be at. I mean, it's definitely a higher place of consciousness.
Yes, and I don't think that, you know, I could sum it up any better than you just did. That is exactly where we're going. We're going, Terrence McKenna said it best in one way, and he said, you know, the goal of evolution is to interiorize the soul and exteriorize the body. In other words, it's complete turning inside out of reality.
Right. Well, it's interesting because when you go out of body and you go up to some of the higher astral planes, I really don't know what to call these places because, you know, I don't have all the Eastern terms and stuff, but there's, on some of these levels or these astral planes, you can manifest things by just thinking about them.
Yes,
and
you
manifest
can.
Them very quickly and very realistically to the point where they're actually more realistic, if that makes any sense, than physical life. And
the reason they are more real is not because they're more solid, it's because they're made out of energy that is information, as we say in physics, and so you're getting the sense, the presence of everything so intensely, that's what makes them more real.
How interesting. I never thought of that, because you do have a lot of access to energy on those levels.
Everything is made of energy, even here and hereafter, and what we're talking about is going from a level of the electromagnetic spectrum that is a very thin slice of the total energy band, and where we're going is the zero-point energy, the energy from which everything comes from and everything returns. And that is at absolute 0 degrees. The vacuum of space is what I'm talking about. And the ancients knew, the Egyptians and the Mayans, through the shamans, because they dealt in these realms, they knew that there was another level of energy, also called spiritual energy, and it can be called astral energy as far as I'm concerned. One term does not make it any more real or less real than the other. But the point is, it's an experience of an intense consciousness.
Well, presumably if you could access this, as people have been doing throughout the centuries, you could have these experiences such as teleportation and levitation and telepathy and manifesting basically anything on physically like people do on the astral planes.
Yes, that's right. And that's where we're going. We're going back again to this idea of Garden of Eden where everything was available to us spontaneously. There didn't have to be life feeding on life. It was given spontaneously. You know, one of the things, I come from a farming community at the base of Mount Rainier, Washington, I never forget, you know, my grassroots, where I came from, because farming and getting my hands dirty is still something I love to do today, and gardening is part of my life. And one of the things that always used to just put me into almost a euphoric state, an epiphany, would be to realize that we never created nothing that we enjoy every day on the dinner plate. Where did those seeds come from for every plant, tree, flower, vegetable, fruit that we put in our mouth, and it was spontaneously provided by the earth, and we keep thinking we can improve it?
Right. It is a little ridiculous. Now,
it is very comical in that sense, absolutely.
Now, about UFOs and how... Did you ever study that whole topic and how it relates to earth changes and the shifting of human consciousness and how it's related to other paranormal aspects?
Yes, I did, because as I mentioned earlier, Preston, that it's by default, because once you get into this level of inquiry into the nature of reality, what happens is everything starts dovetailing and it becomes part of a gigantic cosmic puzzle, and it drives you in a way, if you're curious at all, to continue. And what happened with me, in addition to some experiences that my family has had now in the UFO-type phenomenon, but I don't think we'll have time this evening to get into those, but the UFO, in my opinion, again, works at the level of consciousness because it is made from zero-point energy. In other words, the energy that we see humanity evolving to use and to become, we must assume now, is part of the natural cycle of consciousness, that it takes, a rock, literally, and turns it into an angel, if you will. I really believe that UFOs are living organisms, and I mean, don't get me wrong, there's absolutely beings attached to those circular craft, but those lights in the sky are living beings of consciousness. They can move, as Carl Jung, the great psychologist, said, the flying saucer acts more like a thought than it does a physical object.
I see what you're saying. I mean, you're subscribing to, like, Jacques Vallée's theory that they're sort of, they react to our consciousness, and this is why so many encounters are very symbolic in a lot of ways.
Because they are consciousness. They are the higher level beings themselves that can manifest as any form they want to appear. So when you look at the UFO literature, you get the big cosmic giggle. Ultimately, you find flying saucers landing and beings coming out with a World War II military Nazi uniform. You get folks in hard hats and overalls. You get, you know, you name it, you can find it in the UFO literature, right?
Right, right. I'm still
and
convinced
so,
that there's the gray type aliens and that some of these are just like us, biological beings from other planets, because I'm always wary of any theory that places us at the center of the universe, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Yes, I'm very concerned about that as well. And the idea, though, that has impressed itself more and more on me, we'll just take the grays for a moment. We can see that their skin, you know, is leathery. They seem to have very large eyes. They don't seem to have any visceral, you know, there's no intestinal tract per se, and organ systems as we have. In my opinion, what we're seeing is how consciousness creates other beings from other consciousness. In other words, these are manifestations of our own earthly consciousness. We are actually co-creators of reality, and as we both co-create here on the ground, we're also co-creating in mind, and we're seeing some of these beings now with enough physical energy attached to them. In other words, our intention from focusing on the UFO phenomenon is now feeding back these creations to us.
Well, that could be, but it seems to me that the whole UFO phenomenon's got a huge boost when the atomic age began, and that's what really attracted them, which would seem to indicate that they're actual beings independent from us, right?
Now, let's take that and let's go with that for a minute. Is it, as you said, which is certainly a very viable possibility, however, could we also say that the energy we pumped into the magnetosphere of this planet allowed them to manifest more quickly because we gave them life through nuclear power?
It's entirely possible. Definitely. Yeah, there's definitely different ways to look at this whole phenomena, which is very complex, I think.
It's very complex, and the point is, though, that what we have to do is realize that we are co-creators of reality. Once that sinks in at every level, we realize we're in a dance, a relationship of everything. And so we can't stand outside of this creation is the point. We have to somehow investigate it at the same time realizing that in physics what we call the observer effect is taking over, and we actually see manifest what we're trying to observe.
All right, the Heisenberg principle.
Exactly. So think about what you're talking about with the grays, for example. Why did they manifest after nuclear power? Because we were tapping into this zero-point energy field, and are they concerned? I mean, could it be that other higher-order beings are concerned that we're going to detonate this planet by accident? Absolutely. But in terms of the gray, I'm only speaking to one species now. I think we're actually seeing something that we perhaps co-created. When you see other levels of hierarchies, though, on other planetary systems, other solar systems, that's a whole different idea realm there.
All right. Well, it sounds like we're just beginning to get a handle on what the universe is actually composed of and how it works.
Well, you know, the great saying in science is that once we do figure this out, it's going to be stranger than we could figure out.
Right, right. That's how it goes. Well, John, we're right here at the end of our hour. We have like about a minute left if you want to
give out any last messages to our listening audience.
Well, I think the only thing I would say is keep on keeping on, and your show is certainly important, Preston, to continue doing what you do. You know, at every level, whether we're talking to a few hundred people or a few hundred thousand or beyond, because we're all connected and consciousness is linked, all we have to do is manifest these ideas strongly enough, and we'll see the fruits of them, and that'll come together when we have a global mind. This telepathic link will kick in, and we'll see that we all added something of value to our awakening. And that's where I'm coming from. We're all in this together. We're all going to go to the next level together.
I agree. It's like 6 degrees of separation works both ways to 6 degrees of integration.
That's it. That's great. And the 100th monkey effect will kick in, too.
Exactly. Well, John, it's been a pleasure. I want to thank you so much for coming onto the show. Your book sounds very interesting, and I hope a lot of people go straight out there and buy it.
Thank you. Well, johnjharper.com is always there. If they forget anything, they can come there and browse. We got a lot of fascinating stuff. New DVDs are there on ancient wisdom. I think a lot of folks are going to enjoy.
All right, John. Well, thanks again, and until next time, I want to maybe again have you on the show. But
absolutely. Anytime, Preston.
All right. Well, everyone, that is our show for tonight. I want to thank you all for listening. Our guest tonight has been John J. Harper, and we've been talking about his book, Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. He also has a new DVD out called Science of the Soul, The End Times Solar Cycle of Chaos in 2012, which can be reached on his website, www.johnjharper.com. Thank you all for listening. I hope you can join us next week when we have another amazing guest to talk about UFOs and the paranormal. Until then, have a great evening.